At the end of the day,
as I've said a bunch of times, I don't care who you vote for, just you should vote. It's your civic duty, and you should make an informed vote to make sure you take the time to understand. And it's not just about the presidential candidates, but understand, you know, who your state senators are, who your state reps are, who's your, the member of the governor's council, or the auditor, or the registrar, whoever's on the ballot. Make sure you understand the ballot questions. Don't let someone tell you how to vote. Do your research, make informed decisions. See, you're just wrong.
My opinion.
You should be banished. You're entitled to your own political decisions, but about Rush.
All right. So we talked about governors in general, and now what we'll do is we'll spend the rest of the unit talking about Massachusetts. As well as the governor, we're going to talk about the other constitutional offices. Because our Constitution does create additional positions besides just the governor within the executive branch. But, in terms of the top dog in the executive branch, well, it's definitely the governor. The governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts represents the executive powers of the state, law enforcement. But obviously, the governors only exercise some of its powers. It can't do it all. You can't have one person doing all things in terms of law enforcement. They can't be in every single cruiser that's on the road. They can't be in every health inspection, you know, situation. They can't, you know, maintain the sewers. They don't have the ability to be everywhere. So many of their powers have been delegated by statute. So the general court has passed laws creating executive agencies and given to those agencies specific executive authority to enforce whatever their jurisdiction is. Now, the governor was created in the Charter of 1629. And if you recall when I talked about it, all freemen were allowed to participate. And originally, the governor was elected for one-year terms. The idea was, to the founders of the colony, they wanted turnover. They didn't want somebody going in there for life. They wanted to give multiple people a chance, or at the very least, give the people a chance to have a say. So if someone's doing a good job, let them stay. If they're doing a bad job, get them out. And at no point was there ever term limits. Under the provincial charter, when Massachusetts Bay was merged with Plymouth, we lost the ability to elect a governor because the governor was thereafter appointed by the king and tasked with not enforcing the will of the colonists, but rather enforcing the will of the crown. When that position was created, that's when the governor first had the veto power. Today, the governor is the supreme officer, and they're placed beside the legislature as part of a co-equal branch system. All right, questions so far? As we know, our governor still has veto power, the qualified negative veto, which allows him to potentially check legislative action. But of course, as we covered, I think, sufficiently, we know that in the legislature there's a veto-proof majority. So essentially they can override anything, any veto that any governor would want to make. But our governors are not given the line item veto. So as we said,
If a governor in our state's going to veto a bill, they veto it all. They just can't do a part. All right.
Interestingly enough, aiding the governor in the executive branch are a total of 14 constitutional officers, meaning there are 14 officers total that the Constitution creates. There are, among them, besides the governor, and we're going to cover these, so you don't have to write it down now, there is the lieutenant governor, there is the secretary of the Commonwealth, there is the attorney general, there is the treasurer, there is the auditor, and of course there's 8 members of the governor's council. Those 14 officers make up our executive branch. Now, interestingly enough, originally, only the governors and lieutenant governors were directly elected. Under the original Constitution, as submitted to the people, they only had a direct say in who the governor would be, as well as the lieutenant governor. The rest of the positions were filled either by appointment by the governor or the legislature. For example, the secretary in the Commonwealth, and the treasurer receiver, these were legislative appointees. So the people had no say. It was determined by the Great and General Court. They did a joint ballot. So all of the senators, all of the reps had one vote, and pretty much whoever got a majority could become secretary or the treasurer. Ironically, the Attorney General was a governor appointee. But in our system, we have a very weird, unique system in that we are one of only 2 states that has a governor's council. So originally, the governor could pick the attorney general, but the governor's council had to approve. As far as the original governor's council, well, these were either senators or representatives. They were actually elected by their chamber to serve in those positions. And the auditor, which was established in 1849, that also was an executive appointment. So, the people had a say on who the governors were, and the lieutenant governors. The general court determined who the secretary of state was, as well as the treasurer. The governor and the governor's council picked the attorney general. The governor's council came from the general court, so you had to be a senator or a representative. And the auditor, well, when that was created, that was a governmental governor appointee, just like the attorney general. But in 1855, the people of Massachusetts wanted a change. They didn't like the fact that the vast bulk of the executives were out of the control of the people. So in 1855, the Constitution was amended with the 7th Amendment.
What year was it?
1855. In the 7th Amendment, all of these positions became elective.
Is that the right to appointment one? Is that the right to appointment, the 7th? You have the right to elect your officials?
Yeah. Yeah, is that, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, I was just trying to think of what, because it does have a title, I just can't remember how it was phrased.
Yeah.
So, what does this mean? Well, now, all of these positions, all 14 of them, would appear on the ballot, and they all served one-year terms. Again, why 1 year? Simple. They wanted turnover. They wanted the likelihood that if someone goes in and they're not fit or capable of doing the job, that the people have an easy mechanism to remove them. Well, the problem is, if you ever run for elections, it's not easy to do. It takes a lot of time. And if you're going to go around and you're going to campaign, you're not going to be able to do your job. So, in 1919, the Constitution was amended again. I don't have the number there. I apologize. And it was decided that all of these positions would be elected biannually. So instead of every 1 year, they then serve 2 years. Biannually means both. Either every 2 years or twice in a year.
Ran out of people to elect, everyone died in the flu pandemic.
No, but I like that. That's clever. No, actually the idea was, well, if the general court serves 2 year terms, so should the executive branch. So essentially this would give the people the ability to theoretically throw both the executive and the legislature out. Top to bottom. Of course it never happened, but at least that's a thought. Then in 1964, sorry, I didn't know if I had them all down. 1964, another amendment to the Constitution was passed, and they gave governor, lieutenant governor, secretary, treasury, attorney general, and auditor 4 year terms. But the governor's council remained 2 year terms.
So they gave the governor, the secretary, attorney general, and auditors 4 year terms?
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 positions became 4 year terms, and the remaining 8 were 2 year terms. And then the last change occurred in 1966. When it was declared that people would no longer separately run for lieutenant governor and governor. And in 1966, it created the ticket. So now you do not have the ability to cross party lines. If you're going to vote Democrat, you vote for the Democrat ticket. If you're going to vote for Republican, you vote for the Republican ticket. But there could never be a situation where you don't like the Democrat candidate for governor, but you like the Republican candidate for governor, but you like the Democrat lieutenant governor, but you hate the Republican lieutenant governor. You can't do that anymore.
But there's only a few states where it's a separate ticket, though. Like, for example, like I believe in Georgia, though, it's a separate ticket, though, for the governor and the lieutenant governor in the state of Georgia. And I think in Texas, though, too, it's the same thing, too, in Texas.
I think you're right about Georgia. I'm not sure about Texas, but you're right.
Because
there was a trend in the 1960s to essentially make voting easier. Mm-hmm. Make it less complicated to avoid any potentially harrowing outcomes.
Or people not doing it.
What?
Or people not doing it.
What do you mean not doing it?
If you make things too hard, people won't do it.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, especially if you make people think.
Topic, but more for the class. Do you throw out midterm grades for
what?
Class? Do you submit midterm grades for class?
What does that have to do with what we're talking about right now?
Topic. I want to know.
I know, really bad. No, your midterm is just your first exam.
I apologize. I just wanted to know.
When do we get our second exam grades?
As soon as I have a chance to grade it.
Okay.
Because not everybody took it.
Really?
Yeah, people didn't take it on Monday, so they had to do They had to do makeups. So then I had to go back and I set it for them. I just haven't checked because they were taking it yesterday. So as soon as that, I'm sure that they're done, then I'll start grading.
Okay.
All right. Anyways, so back on topic. So those are the big changes. Started off 1 year. Originally, only the governor and lieutenant governor were elected. Then you added a position
Then you made all of them elective. Then you made them 2 years. And then you made most of them
four. Actually, not most. Because technically there are 8 members of the Governor's Council. So some 4-year terms. All right. The term for the executive branch begins officially, you ready? At noon on the Thursday following the first Wednesday in January after the election.
Coffee? Is there some reason they chose that?
Yes.
Like the start of a fiscal year or something?
No. At noon on Thursday following the first Wednesday in January after the election.
So the second or first term?
So the election's in November. It's going to begin in January. Why is it the first Thursday after the first Wednesday? What will that day never be?
No.
The governor. It has nothing to do with national. We're only talking Massachusetts.
It'll never be a holiday. Thursday?
No, it will never be New Year's Day.
Oh.
It could never be New Year's Day.
Just say second Thursday, then.
No, that makes no sense. Because they'll make it too late. So the earliest potential a governor could start is January 2nd. The latest they could start is the 8th. The 7th? I can't do the math in my head. No. No, because it would always be, So it would be early on in the year. All right. Questions? That's like the first Tuesday of the first full week in November. That's always election day by congressional law. That was put in there, so that way it would never interfere with All Saints Day, which is tomorrow.
Is
all right.
What it's called?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. What is that?
All Saints Day? It's a Catholic day of obligation in which you give regard to all saints.
Right after Halloween?
Yeah.
I feel like is that like Day of the Dead though? I know it's a Mexican holiday.
Well, in Mexico, they celebrate Day of the Dead, right?
Yeah, it's a Mexican holiday though.
Yeah, but the election day had nothing to do with the Mexicans. It was chosen because of the Catholics.
I know that's kind of off topic though.
But you're right. All Catholic variations of Catholicism celebrate it in different ways. And to be honest with you, the funnest is Mexican. All right. As for our governor, our Constitution officially declares our governor to be the supreme executive magistrate. This is verbatim as it's written in Article 2. The supreme executive magistrate. Meaning his job is to be in charge. The position formally is titled the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. But interestingly enough, when you speak to the governor, his constitutional title is His Excellency.
What'd you get to say?
And it has not been amended. So if you come across Governor Healy, you must call her His Excellency.
Can we still do that?
What? No, because how many people have actually read the Constitution? Why is that corny? We almost had to call the President of the United States His Excellency. That was John Adams' suggestion.
That's still kind of corny.
But the framers of the Constitution didn't like that because His Excellency... Exactly. They didn't like it. So George Washington officially adopted the title and setting the precedent as being Mr. President. All right. In the Constitution, there are qualifications to serve. Just like there are qualifications to serve in the Senate and the House, in order to become governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, you must be a resident of the Commonwealth for 7 years immediately prior to election. You must reside here for 7 years. A full 7 year period. Immediately prior to the election. Interestingly enough, a recent governor was almost disqualified for that. Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was a resident of Massachusetts, but he ran the Olympics out in Utah. And technically he moved. Because under IRS rules, if you live in another state for half of the calendar year plus one day, you are technically under the IRS regarded as being a resident of that state. Well, Romney was out there, even though he had a house in Massachusetts, he was out there for several years getting ready for the Salt Lake City Games. And then after the Olympics were over and done with, he moved back, ran for governor, and won. In 2002. Well, the Democrats almost got him disqualified. But the SJC said, because they gave it to him on a technicality, because he never formally changed his address, they allowed that to stay. Personally, being the constitutional conservative that I am, I would have disqualified. Because the Constitution is clear. And by the way, I've told you all before, yes, I'm a Republican, but I believe in the Constitution. So I would disqualify a Democrat or a Republican if they don't follow the rules. He didn't follow the rules. But what do I know? I'm just a lowly lawyer and professor. But beyond that, there's no other qualification. You just have to be in the state 7 years prior to running.
So you don't have to be like educated at Harvard or anything to run for governor, though?
Who said you had to have a degree? There's nothing in the Constitution that said you even had to have a degree.
No, the Constitution never said you had to be educated at Harvard, though, or any law school. You have to live in the state for at least 7 years, though.
That's it.
Yeah, man. You can go to school to be governor.
So, I think it's vague or open because it doesn't say if you are born natural.
Only President of the United States has to be a natural born citizen.
Oh, okay.
So how long have you lived in Massachusetts?
Five.
So wait 2 years, you can run for governor.
Oh wow, no.
I'd vote for you.
I'm asking this because I know that for senators and is it reps?
State reps.
No, it's okay. I get it.
No, state in Massachusetts.
No, it's for.
No, not even at the Congress.
Oh.
The only person that has to be a natural born citizen is the President of the United States.
Oh, okay.
Because the framers, and I agree with them 100%, they believe if you're foreign born, you're going to have foreign interests.
Okay.
If you are a member of Congress, you can have foreign interests, but you're going to get outvoted.
Okay.
Ilhan Omar. There's the example that I can use.
Okay.
Somalia? I think that's where she was born in Somalia.
But under the U.S. Constitution, to be a member of the House of Representatives, you have to be 25. And I think it's a one-year requirement to live in the state or the district that you run in. I could be wrong. Might be 2 years, but it's not that much.
But in terms of the Commonwealth, the Constitution of the Commonwealth, governor, 7 years. Now, obviously, the governor gets paid a salary, and his salary, or her salary, is relatively high. The Democrats passed legislation, and we talked about it, where they all got raises a few years back. You know what it was? It was 2017. Because they rammed it through right after Donald Trump got elected, when everyone was going, "Oh, Trump, Trump, Trump." And they gave themselves all like 30% raises. Charlie Baker vetoed the bill, but when his veto was overridden, he took the raise. Maura Healey is currently getting whatever the current rate is. It's got to be close to 190,000, if not a little more. All right. Now, in terms of authority, most of the governor's powers are expressly listed in the Constitution. Most of them. But there are some powers that have been given to the governor that have been given as the result of statutes. So they've passed laws and expanded the power in certain areas. Now, rather than trying to remember them all, I'm going to give you a list of the big ones. The first power. Oh, and of course, keep in mind, all of these powers can be checked and balanced by either the legislative or the judicial branches. Power number one. The governor presents a budget. The governor presents a budget. Now, the legislature approves the budget, but it's the governor who drafts the budget. Now, when they're engaged in budget negotiations, the governor can use a line item veto over the budget. So if the House or the Senate slip something in, the governor can just cut that out. But every point almost that I've heard about in the news in recent years, and this goes back to even before Jane Swift was governor. Whenever a governor does that, usually the Senate and the House, they work together and they put it back in. Particularly if it's a Republican trying to cut out something that the Democrats want. Because ultimately, the budget is just a proposal, but it gets made into a statute that is passed by the general court. All right. Like everybody, the governor can propose legislation. The governor actually has the ability to petition the general court to pass a law. But, like anybody, it has to be signed on by one member of each chamber. So the governor presents the budget. The governor can use a line item veto and cut part of the budget. The governor can propose laws. The governor can veto laws. Of course, checks and balances, the veto can be overridden. Do you have those? Yes, I mean, yes. The governor can get involved in loans. So if the state is going to take a loan out, the governor can be involved in the negotiations. In particular, determining how long the loan's going to be. So is the state going to take a 5-year loan, an 8-year loan? Well, the governor is involved. That's a boring power, but it's a power. If the legislature has adjourned, the governor can call a special session. The governor has the power to call them in. And if the general court is acting out of control, with the advice and consent of the governor's council, they can force the general court to adjourn. but only if the request comes from the leaders in the legislature. So, the hell do I mean by that? Very simple. Let's say the House and Senate is in session, and the Senate decides, well, the holidays are coming, so we're going to adjourn. Well, the House members, even though the Speaker wants to adjourn, does not let it adjourn because they're trying to do something political. Well, it seems like they're running off the rails, they're running amok, they're not listening to the leaders. The Speaker has a right to put in a request to the governor, I mean the governor's council, and force an adjournment, send everybody home.
Are they fired or can they just come back?
Well, they can come back.
Okay, so the meeting just ends.
Just the session. The session ends. That, I don't know if that's ever happened, but it's outlined in the Constitution, so that's why I mentioned it. All right. The governor is technically the president of the governor's council, but he or she does not possess a vote. So he technically is the presiding officer of the governor's council, but he or she cannot vote in governor's council's decisions. The governor can grant pardons for any crime that has been committed under state law with the advice and consent of the general court. The governor's council. So if the governor wants to pardon somebody, he's going to get a majority votes in the governor's council. The governor may appoint and remove department heads. The governor may appoint and remove department heads in most of the executive departments. With the advice and consent of the governor's council. The governor can appoint all judicial officers. All judicial officers. With the advice and consent of the governor's council. Sensing a theme?
Yeah, the governor's council has a lot of power.
Yeah. Well, the whole purpose of the governor's council is to limit the power of the governor.
Checks and balances.
Yeah. So they call him a king, his excellency, but he does not wield the power of a king, or she. And last but not least, the last major power that I want you to know, the governor is the commander-in-chief of the state militia / National Guard. The governor is the commander-in-chief of the state's military forces. Now, interestingly enough, under the laws of the Commonwealth, we do have both. We have a National Guard, which is a subset of the United States Army, but the law still provides for militias. But militias are to be mustered by the town. So if the poop ever hit the fan and a civil war erupts, the governor has the authority to send an order to the towns to call forth a militia. And under the laws of Massachusetts, any male age 16 to 60 can be required to serve in a town militia.
So like what will we be like fighting against?
A civil war.
Oh, okay. I missed that point.
And I used that as an example because that's the last time it's happened. So when the southern states seceded and they decided to fire on Fort Sumner, and war was declared, Massachusetts, the governor, sent orders down to the town. The town was required to muster up militias, and the militias would eventually get uniforms, and they would go and serve. And by the way, one of the first black militia units came from Massachusetts. Just FYI. Because Massachusetts was one of the states that freedmen were allowed to bear arms. All right, question on any of those powers? Well, in addition to all of those specific powers, the governor also has the power to reorganize, restructure the government within the executive branch. Meaning, he's allowed to increase the size of boards or commissions, or she. I gotta get she in my head because we have a governoress, a woman who's governor, so she has the power to set the number of seats that are on boards, the number of seats that are on commissions, only the ones that, of course, are in the executive branch. We're not talking, you know, boards or commissions that could be mandated by the federal government. Only state boards and entities. Some of these boards and commissions have members who volunteer their time. So, for instance, I am on one called the Central Massachusetts Municipal Planning Organization, the CMMPO. And what we do is we coordinate town planning efforts in Central Mass. I am the Southeast Area Rep. I represent the 8 towns that are in the south of Worcester. So what we do is once a month we gather and we hear about major infrastructure projects. Well, the structure of that commission was determined by a governor years ago. So if the governor wanted to, today she could add more members. She could expand the jurisdiction. She would have that authority to do it. Some appointments on some of the commissions are paid positions. Some of them are full-time. And it's only in my head because I was reading that there's all kinds of problems going on. But apparently there is a lot of shenanigans going on in the Cannabis Control Commission. Apparently they're not doing their job. There are accusations of corruption. And members are resigning or getting kicked off the board. So it's a mess. But at some point, the governor is going to have to step in and wield her executive authority if the legislature wants that commission to continue. I don't really want to get into the different commissions, though, beyond that, because it's just really, really complicated. Massachusetts also has a cabinet system. Now, interestingly enough, the cabinet system is separate from the Governor's Council. The cabinet in Massachusetts is separate from the Governor's Council. The cabinet is made up of the heads of the major agencies or departments, with the exception of the ones who are elected. The bulk of the cabinet members are appointed by the governor and serve at the pleasure of the governor. So, who are we talking about? Well, who's in our cabinet? We have, there's a Secretary of Highways, there's like a Secretary that deals with technology, there's a Secretary that deals with education, there's a Secretary that deals with health matters, housing. Basically, they represent all of the executive agencies that deal with those specific policy areas.
We also have a Secretary or Department of Agriculture.
No. I don't think in Massachusetts we do.
Yeah, because this state's like not very big with farm.
No, we used to be, but I think anything dealing with ag is rolled into
there's some agencies. I think it's the Commerce Department.
Oh.
In Massachusetts.
Oh, so because like other states, they call it the Department of Agriculture. They're like in like more like states that are like really big with farming. Like for example, like states like Nebraska and Iowa.
Those states have it because those are major business entities. Massachusetts was once made up of a majority of small independent farmers. But the problem is property taxes have basically crippled them.
And rocks.
Oh, well, yeah, well, that's why they were all small farms. They couldn't make the big fields because it was a lot of labor intensive. That's the reason why we got all the cool stone walls, though.
I know, the stone walls.
But unfortunately, there was very few farmers that were able to make businesses the scale of what goes on, you know, in the heartland of the country. So a lot of the family farms, when the mom and dad died, the kids didn't want the farm, so they sold the land and they built developments. Built malls.
And in fact, if you go into any of the towns or cities, just about every single parcel that has been developed, at one point there was probably with some type of farming activity there.
Because there was a point when something like 95% of the people that live in Massachusetts had small independent farms.
All right. Authority to appoint. Oh, I found it in my notes. All right, so there we go. It was administration and finance, education, energy and environmental affairs, health and human services, housing and economic development, labor and workforce development, public safety and security, and transportation. So I think in Massachusetts, if I had to guess, farming would probably fall under housing and economic development.
Okay. I was just curious, that's all.
Yep, no worries. All right, so I already did about the authority to appoint, so I'm really off right here. I talked about that. Okay, so I guess we're going to go through this. So how many boards? There you go, 500 boards. 8 cabinet positions, 500 boards. We've already said that the governor has the ability to appoint the heads of the major agencies and departments. We talked about that. The only areas that the governor cannot appoint, though, are those agencies under the other elected officers. So the governor can't appoint anybody in the Secretary of the Commonwealth's department. Those positions are filled by the Secretary of the Commonwealth. The governor can't appoint anybody in the Treasurer's office. That's handled by the Secretary of the Treasury. The governor can't appoint anyone in the Attorney General's office. Those appointments are determined by the AG. And the governor cannot appoint anybody in the auditor's department because that's the job of the auditor. But all of the rest of the agencies, yes, the governor has a say. Governor has a say.
I have an interesting one. So I'm a notary public.
I'm a licensed notary public, which technically means I'm an officer of the court.
So you're a notary?
I'm a notary, yeah. And in my commission was actually signed by the governor. So I first got a notary when Duvall was governor, so I got Duvall Patrick's signature on mine, and then I got re-upped when Baker was governor, so he signed mine. And my commission expires next year in June, so I'll get one with Healy's signature on it as well. Oh, by the way, if the Governor Council did not want me to serve as notary, they could actually reject my application.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. Maybe they find out that I was corrupt or something. I've never given them a reason to, but they theoretically could. Checks and balances. So that would be an example of the governor appoints me, and they sign off on it. So every single time I've gotten re-upped, I've gotten a letter just congratulating me from whoever the local member of the governor's council was. Hopefully the trend will continue. All right. Shut up, Lomanic. Focus.
Now, because the executive branch is so huge, the truth of the matter is the governor really cannot exercise effective oversight. There are too many state employees that fall within the different agencies and boards and departments and bureaus. Yada, yada, yada. So, it can be said, like I said last class, that our governor is like a CEO in a corporation. They're there. Technically, the buck stops with them. But in terms of all of the minutiae, the day-to-day operations, they probably do not have a clue. Simply because they don't have the time or the ability to do so. So, they have to rely upon their underlings to effectively report up to her. So, if there's bad things going on in the realm of health and human services, you know, they're finding large outbreaks of E. coli in wells. Well, the governor's not going to be the one that's going to come out and do the testing. You know, there's going to be people that are going to do the site testing, they're going to do the studies, they're going to do the reviews, and they will report it up to the governor, and the governor will have the ability to make generalized suggestions, but because our governor is not a subject matter expert in the realm of E. coli infestations in water, she would probably just have to rely upon the advice of the people who actually knew or know better. A really weird hypothetical, but it makes the case. Alright. What happens if the governor dies or resigns?
Does the lieutenant governor take over?
Oh, there is an interesting line of succession that has been established by statute. If there is a vacancy, the lieutenant governor comes in. The lieutenant governor would not become governor. They are only acting governor.
Until someone else can be elected.
Until the next election.
Oh, you gotta wait.
So they'll remain in the seat until the next time. The lieutenant governorship would not be filled. It would remain vacant. This happened back in 2001. So we had a Republican governor, Paul Cellucci, who was chosen by the Bush administration to become an ambassador. I think he became an ambassador to the Vatican. So when that occurred, the governor left. And his lieutenant governor, Jane Swift, technically became the first female governor in the history of the Commonwealth. But, technically speaking, she was not full governor. She was acting governor. And she remained that until the term was over. And then Romney came in and kind of shoved her away because she was thinking about running in her own right. But Romney had all the cash and Swift backed down. I met Jane Swift. Very nice woman. Very intelligent. I wish she ran. She would have done really good by us. But she was denied the opportunity.
Lame.
What?
You said lame.
Now, look at me. All right. Now, what's the difference? Yes?
No, we can. I wanted to know why they leave the lieutenant office vacant.
Because there's nothing in the Constitution that gives them a mechanism to fill it.
So then the role he or she plays, who
plays
that
role? Nobody.
Is it open forever?
It's just open until the next election. Okay. By the way, the same was true at the United States government level until the 25th Amendment, I think, was created. Or was it 26th? I can't remember when they put it in. Because when Kennedy got shot, LBJ became president, but the vice president wasn't filled. So it had to happen in the late 60s, maybe early 70s, because then when Nixon resigned, Ford came over and became president, but the House of Representatives picked a replacement. So it happened in the, again, might have been the 25th Amendment. I don't remember. But in Massachusetts, we don't have that. So if the lieutenant governor comes over, we don't have a lieutenant governor until, what the heck is his name? He was one. He was Duvall's lieutenant governor.
Robert Duvall?
No, Duvall Patrick.
Okay.
He was the former mayor of Worcester. He got busted. He was out. He got in an accident, and he was all hopped up on liquor and drugs. Oh, damn it! I can't remember his name. This wasn't too long ago. So in that instance, we had a governor. But when the lieutenant governor resigned, we didn't have a lieutenant governor again.
So, I'm just thinking loud. The lieutenant governor, I come and take the place of the governor.
Yeah.
Somebody, I said the term, somebody else is appointed or elected. Sorry, somebody is elected and then comes to take the position of the governor now. Can I come back to my...
Only if the gubernatorial candidate selects you to be lieutenant governor.
Okay.
Because remember, since 66, we elect a ticket. But your term would end. Your term would end.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to.
Yeah. All right. Now, the reason why Massachusetts doesn't have a requirement to appoint a lieutenant governor is because, by law, there's the next in line. So let's say both the governor and the lieutenant governor die in a plane crash. Well, under state law, the Secretary of the Commonwealth comes in and becomes acting governor. And then whoever the assistant secretary is would come in and be the acting Secretary of the Commonwealth.
Was it Tim Murray?
Tim Murray. There you go. Thank you. I knew someone could Google it real quick.
It took me a while.
All right. So here's our succession. Governor goes out, lieutenant governor. If lieutenant governor goes out, then there's the Secretary of the State. If the Secretary of State goes out, then it becomes the Attorney General. If the Attorney General goes out, then it becomes the Secretary of the Treasury. If something happens to the Secretary of the Treasury, then it becomes the Auditor. And if all of them are wiped out, we have no governor. Because Massachusetts statute is silent beyond that point.
So what happens?
Don't know.
No one's thought to add that.
Will it be like an anarchy?
I'm guessing what the governor's council and the cabinet would have to do is kind of have to run it, generally speaking, as a council, but we wouldn't have one person.
Not in terms of that, but in terms of official appointments, maybe outside state appointments, when governor and lieutenant are not there, is the Secretary of State that becomes there?
Yes. Oh, all right. So if we're going to talk about they just go somewhere out of state, yes, that's exactly what happens. So theoretically, whenever Governor Healey goes on her many grand adventures, because she has been out of the state very frequently, and it's not reported, so there's actually an ethics investigation going on about her. The lieutenant governor becomes acting, but if it's a situation when the lieutenant governor is also out of the state, then yes, the Secretary of State would come over and fill it temporarily as acting. And by the way, when they're acting, they have to take an oath. And when they're done, they actually have to officially sign a document saying they give power back.
Okay, that's not the document. Is there a power struggle?
They have to, because that could be an impeachable offense. All right. Any other questions on the line of succession? Now, by the way, the line of succession statute was passed during the Cold War, when there was a concern that the state could get nuked, because we had like Wyman Gordon's in Grafton that was actually on the Soviet strike list because they made ball bearings, which were used in many military weapons and hardware. But if, God forbid, something like that happened, you know, they were just trying to make a contingency. And by the way, that's when the United States government did the same thing.
All right. If there's no other questions about the governor, let's talk about the lieutenant governor. Lieutenant governor is, generally speaking, a boring position. But it has a history as long as the governor. But whereas the governor of the Commonwealth was created by the original charter, when King Charles the First granted the charter to Massachusetts Bay, he actually mandated that there be a lieutenant governor. Because these people were coming over into the middle of the godforsaken wilderness and something bad could happen. And the king did not want to allow this business enterprise to go kaputz, even though it was a privately held company. So the king mandated that there be a lieutenant governor, and there's been one pretty much ever since. And the primary purpose has always been the same. Ready for this?
Live, exist, and be a fresh body ready to take over.
This is the primary job of the lieutenant governor. Just to have a heartbeat. Just to have a heartbeat. Because the governor, lieutenant governor, takes over in the absence of the governor.
That's really sad.
Truth be told, the Constitution and the statutes haven't really given the governor, a lieutenant governor, much more power than that either. But some lieutenant governors are very busy because the governor can basically assign duties to the lieutenant governor. Now today, as we know, after 1966, they are elected coterminously. That's the fancy word, coterminously, with the governor at the same time. So, in 2026, the governor's seat is up for election. That means the lieutenant governor's seat is also up for election. The Constitution does grant the lieutenant governor, which is interesting because not only do we have a woman governor who has to go by His Excellency, we also have a woman lieutenant governor who has to go by the title of His Honor. As we said, when the lieutenant governor becomes governor, they become acting governor. So they can discharge the powers, they can do the duties of the governor, but they don't actually assume the position. Our Constitution is clear. Only an elected official is governor. Now, in terms of behavioral responsibilities and duties, there is no difference. They do sit in the governor's office. They do get to sign everything like the governor did. But if they're going to sign a document, they don't sign it as governor. They sign it as acting. All of the memorandum, the business cards, everything has to say acting governor. Now, the major responsibility of the lieutenant governor, if you're going to give them actual duties, is the lieutenant governor serves as the ninth voting member of the governor's council. So the governor technically is the presiding officer. There are 8 elected members. But in order for there to be an odd number, the lieutenant governor sits in. Question?
No, I didn't have a question.
Oh, all right. No, I thought you were going to raise your hand.
I wasn't going to raise my hand. I didn't have a question.
Okay. So if the governor doesn't attend, though, the lieutenant governor assumes the position of presiding officer, and under the rules, if the lieutenant governor is the presiding officer, they only can vote in a tie-breaking situation. Questions. That's really all I got for Lieutenant Governor.
stupid, well, not a stupid role, but a very boring and uninspiring role.
Well, again, it depends. So, our previous lieutenant governor, Karen Polito, Charlie Baker had her quite busy. He constantly had her going out and meeting with municipal leaders. So she said multiple times, and it was very true, that during her 8 years as lieutenant governor, she visited all 351 city and towns in the Commonwealth twice. So she was always, she was never in Boston, she was always out on the road, because she would serve as the governor's eyes and ears on the street.
That's pretty cool. That's a good
way to use it. Our current lieutenant governor, I'm going to be embarrassed to say, I don't know her name.
Her name's Kim Driscoll.
Thank you. I've never met her, I've never seen her, and I've never heard of her coming anywhere in my area. So I don't know if Governor Healey has given her any duties. She must have. I just don't know what it is.
She was the former mayor of Salem.
Right. Yeah, I know she didn't have big qualifications. But, you know, the Democrats, you know, they're going to win the election this time around, so... because the Republicans put guy out there that was pretty far extreme. So
which guy was it?
Jeff Deal.
Oh, right.
Yeah. He
was endorsed by Trump.
Right, but Charlie Baker was going against him. And most of the Mass GOP that was Charlie Baker, Mass GOP went against him. So he didn't get the money, he didn't get the support, and it was just a mess. But I told you before, the Mass GOP is a mess in general. So, yeah, so I'm going to have to see what Driscoll does. I'm sure she does something. And again, I'm not trying to be disparaging. I don't know.
With elections and governors moving up and down, I thought the lieutenant was doing most of the role. Because most of the time, the governors, will not be around because they are making sure that other things, campaigning, doing this. Is that not when the lieutenant steps in?
It depends. Mm-hmm. It depends.
Like this election year.
Right. I'm sure, yeah, she's been out of the state a lot. Mm-hmm. I know she was a Massachusetts delegate to the DNC. Mm-hmm. I saw her on camera there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm sure Driscoll has been acting governor a lot. But I'm talking about, I can't think of any specific duties that mm-hmm. she's involved in. So Tim Murray, before he resigned, Duvall had him going out, and they were doing a lot of talk about infrastructure issues. So he was always going around, and he was like looking at bridges and roads and culverts and stuff like that. I remember that. I just don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. And if you know what she's involved in, you know, I'd love to know, because I like to file it in the mental cabinet. Just so that way I could speak positively about the person. I just don't know what she's doing. Interestingly enough, though, we've never really had a situation, generally speaking, where the lieutenant governor ran for governor and won upon the governor leaving office. You know, sometimes you think, okay, whoever the vice president is, potentially they're going to run for president. Well, in Massachusetts, we've never had that dynamic. Typically, the lieutenant governor becomes lieutenant governor, and when the term's over, they leave. There have been, in recent years, it hasn't happened since the 90s. Bill Weld was governor, and then he resigned. He went and became the ambassador to Ireland, and then Paul Cellucci came in, ran. So he filled the term, ran for his own, won successfully. But I can't... Dukakis was a lieutenant governor.
So he was the governor, though, too.
He was the governor, but he was a lieutenant governor in the 70s, and he became governor several terms in the 80s. It just doesn't happen that often. So will Driscoll run if Healey decides not to? Possibly, but who knows? All right, Governor's Council. What does the Governor's Council do? Well, I've already kind of let it out of the bag. The Governor's Council is technically the Executive Council. There are 8 elective seats plus Lieutenant Governor, making an odd number. Massachusetts is only one of two states that has a governor's council. The other one is New Hampshire. The governor is not restrained in executive power. Why New Hampshire? Well, New Hampshire basically, when they made their constitution, did a carbon copy of our Article 2. Of our, yeah. Because they liked what John Adams had put in there. Again, they just fought a war against executive power, and they didn't want to give their own executive that type of power. In the original 13, there were other states that had it, but since they scrapped those constitutions and they've moved on. So the other governors are technically more powerful than our own. The 8 members of the governor's council are elected, and they serve 2-year terms. 2-year terms. It's a paid position. It's a part-time position. They only meet on Wednesdays after 10 o'clock. And they only stay so long as there's business. So if there's no business, they open the session and then they close it. They get paid approximately $40,000 a year. I forgot to say. To be qualified to be lieutenant governor, it's the same as the governor. So you have to live in the state for 7 years. To be a member of the governor's council, it's 5 years. So to be eligible, you must live in Massachusetts for 5 years prior to election. And the major reason for this position is to check the governor. As I said, John Adams and the people of Massachusetts are terrified of executive abuse, so they put this in to basically rein in the governor at all times. And there's also a historical nature of it. Going back to the creation of Massachusetts Bay, there was a governor's council. If you remember, the original governor's council was made up of the deputies. And then eventually it became a specialized position. And it wasn't until, the Declaration of Liberties, but rather it was the provincial charter in 1691 where the governor's council kind of been advisory. Now, interestingly enough, under our Constitution, the Governor's Council must give their consent. They must vote on certain matters. Now, this does not mean they have to agree. They don't have to affirm. They can reject. But they have to give their say. The biggest thing are appointments. Executive appointments. The governor's council must vote yes. So, and again, I gave myself as the example. Notary publics. So technically the governor signs, but the whole governor's council has to vote. And to become a notary public, you have to get at least 5 of the 9 votes. The governor's council votes on all judges in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The governor's council must sign off on all pardons. Now, by the way, the governor cannot pardon someone charged under federal law. The governor can only pardon someone under state law. But before they can get a pardon, the governor's council has to hear the case, and they vote either yes or no. The governor's council also, as I said, votes on, we're going to call a special session of the legislature, or we're going to force them to adjourn. And And lastly, all payments of monies that come out of the state coffers, the governor's council must sign off on. So this means all of the salaries, all of the utility bills, all of the expenses, the governor's council must approve, or not a single penny can be spent. Questions?
I like the governor's council.
Susan?
I tried checking out how she was doing, what she was doing, but the little I read, I find it weird. They call it Team Massachusetts. So it's like she's working together with Governor Haley. They do everything, like, it's a team, whatever is being done. So I didn't really see something concrete that this is where she's been, this is what she's doing. All they said is that it's a team, like Team Massachusetts.
That's that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's good that they're working in tandem, that they're getting along. But again,
at least we should see
something.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does that mean? What does Team Massachusetts mean?
What
are you doing for the people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's here for a palatial, like, 351 states. Like you said, she listed, it's listed here.
But yeah. No, that's too bad.
Well, it's like what you said, Professor. It's like, you know, Team Massachusetts. Like, they're like the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, cheer on Massachusetts. So they're a team.
Okay, that's great. Yay, go M. Give me an A. Give me an S. Give me an A. Okay, that's fine. But what are you doing to help the people?
The priority of the Team Massachusetts is competitive, equality, and affordable. Yeah.
That's political speak.
Yeah.
For a nothing burger. But it feels good.
Sad. Get the government we want, right?
Deserve.
Exactly, because who votes for it? The people. So if you don't like the government, do something about it. All right.
Do I have enough time to finish? I only got a little bit left, but I only got 3 minutes left.
So we will hold off, and I'll give you the duties of the remaining secretaries. Then we will go and start talking about... What comes next? I think it's the bureaucracy. I think the bureaucracy's next. Let me look. Seven. Nope, we're going to go do the state judiciary. We're going to talk about the courts. Give you a little knowledge about the courts. All right. So, just a reminder, if you haven't voted yet, vote. I don't care who you vote for, just vote. Make an informed decision. And here is probably the weirdest thing that I'm going to say. If you don't know anything about the person whose name is on the ballot, you can't find anything about them, you don't know what they do, you don't have to fill in the bubble. You can vote by non-voting. That's perfectly acceptable. So don't feel you need to go, boom, 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 fill everything in. Because I'll tell you, we had a Speaker of the House in Massachusetts, Thomas Finner. He was one of the most powerful speakers in the last 50 years. But he was being investigated by the federal government for election shenanigans with redistricting. When all of that news was breaking, no Republican ran against him. But the people of his district were so mad, he received more blanks than actual votes.
Blanks count as a vote?
No.
That says something.
Blanks or write-ins don't count as votes. But what does that say? There's more people that would vote for a fictitious Mickey Mouse than you. Do you think you're going to run for re-election again? Mm-hmm. You know, that's when he decided his gig was up. So, just be informed. It's all I ask. And then obviously we're not really going to talk about elections on Tuesday because we wouldn't know the results. But if we want to talk about the results of some of the state elections on Thursday, we can do that. I just don't really want to get into the presidential stuff. Okay?
All right.
Everyone have a wonderful Halloween.
Thank you.
If you're driving, be careful for all of the little ghosts and ghouls that might be doing trick-or-treating along the roads. Drive slow and carefully.